and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show right here broadcasting at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas, number 95. And this is September 27th, 2004. For the next hour, we'll talk about building, maintaining, repairing, all designed, of course, with the blind in mind. The host for the Blind Handyman, ladies and gentlemen, Don Schaub.
Oh, Mr. Tom, I don't know about all this now.
And we finally made it, Don Patterson.
Glad to be here. Beautiful fall afternoon.
Yeah. Very special guest indeed. My brother Gordon is here. Hi, Gordon.
Hello. How you doing?
Aren't you glad we finally got on?
Absolutely.
Goodness gracious. But ladies and gentlemen, my name's Tom Houston, by the way. But let's introduce the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show, my buddy, Phil Parr.
Pretty exciting, isn't it, huh?
Oh, I'm just...
What it is.
I scooted up to the edge of my chair.
Did we have problems today? It was one of those, usually everything goes pretty smooth, but our floppy disk drive, is that my headphones feeding back? Floppy disk drive wouldn't open, and we don't have any email to roll. We have a little email, but we had to scrounge some from other sources, and things just, it just hadn't been a good day. Let's have a beer and forget it.
I think
that's it.
That's
you
a
got
good idea.
Now, what is that trying to feed? Well, that's my little machine here. Let's see if it'll talk. Listen.
Something.
Let's see.
Oh, here we go.
4 minutes, 15. All right, there we go. I'm recording on the Plex Talk also. We're doing it three things. We're doing it on DAT, on CD, and on the Plex Talk, just for fun. Just
I know you folks, experiment today.
I know you folks love to know things like that, but some of you may have these Plex Talk deals. They're too expensive, but they're pretty neat.
It's a neat machine.
Pretty neat little machine. Dave Farron wants one. I can tell you that. He got an email. We got an email from him the other day. He's coming to Houston, coming to Houston.
Good deal, Dave.
All the way from Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
All the way from Pennsylvania.
My goodness.
And we have with us an expert today, as Tom mentioned, somebody who actually knows something.
Yeah.
Who's actually done some things as opposed to sitting here. Not you, Pat. hangover, do you, huh?
Yeah.
Did the Astros win or lose?
The Astros won, and they won yesterday. The announcers refused to talk about the 8-0 grubbing they suffered at the hands of Milwaukee the day before.
Is that right? 8-0.
8-0, and they claim they're a wild card contender.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Yeah, they sure they are. What about Lufkin Friday night?
They won.
Did you listen to that? 29-8 or some.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're getting into the district play, too. I mean, they're a better team than they were last year, and they were tough last year.
John said that there were more people on. This game was down south of us at the Woodlands or Conroe or someplace. There were more people on our side, we were the visiting team, than there were on the home side. Just no school spirit there, you know.
They're a powerhouse. I'm glad they did away with the district situation like they had it last year. We were in like a four-team district, which didn't make sense. We played the same schools twice.
Yeah.
Now we're in with the big boys now. I mean,
we're going to state this year, though, aren't we?
I think they'll be there. I think Outlaw may have another shot at it.
I think they will. And our band was a whole lot better than this. And this is a big school down at Houston. And we're, you know.
Yeah, Klein Forest or some.
Of course, in Lufkin on Friday nights, there's not a hell of a lot to do but go to the football game or go down to the hen house and feel the warm eggs. About all you can really do. It's not much of a town. Houston, it's good to hear you laugh. We didn't mean to upset you.
Well, no, I wasn't upset.
You were,
you know me.
Resilient.
Nothing else.
Went to Yahoo for a Hotmail account. No, you weren't upset.
Yahoo.
Amen.
You know, I never go there, so no. I had forgotten we were with MSN and Hotmail.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gordon Vick.
Yes.
All right.
Probably the only one of us today who's accomplished something.
And what did he accomplish?
He accomplished some light work out here.
Tell us of your accomplishments, sir.
Well, all we did was change out some ballast and some fluorescent lights.
But they weren't normal ballast.
Well, that's true. They were electronic ballast, and we had to change the bulbs. And the reason being is they're just so much more efficient, and they operate better. They're instant on, and you don't have to wait for them to warm up.
And boy, they're brighter, aren't they?
They're bright. They're very nice. Very nice.
Well, I got a question. Do they have to be soldered in, or do they plug in, or screw terminals, or what?
No, just wire nutted in.
All right.
Yeah.
But this is just something that that, you know, I always say if you're changing a plug in your house or a light switch, don't worry about the wire. Just put them on, and if it works, fine. If it doesn't, reverse them. That you couldn't do that with these ballasts. That wouldn't work.
Yeah, you'd have to color match them, color code them.
Actually, the color didn't work because when you change to electronic ballast, the color code changes.
Yeah.
Two wires now become one. And, of course, the instructions didn't give me a diagram, so you have to kind of figure it out for yourself.
How many wires are involved coming from the ballast?
Oh, geez, I think there's 2, 4, 6, about 7 wires.
Goodness.
Well, each one.
From each ballast.
It looked like 20 or 30 when you look at it from the floor.
You know, they're just wires that go to the sockets.
Yeah.
But as you well know, the sockets have to match one another on the opposite side in order for it to work. So it's really not very difficult if you'll just stop and think a few minutes and look at the diagram you actually have on the ballast.
Uh-huh.
And look at your light fixture. You can figure it out pretty easily.
Well, it worked first time. I mean, put a bulb, you wired it up, put a bulb in it, turned it on, and bingo, it worked.
Mm-hmm. Like I say, it's not difficult. If it was, I couldn't have done it, Phil.
Is that the deal?
Yeah, that's the deal.
We're not.
And if you remember, Phil, remember I was talking, what was it, last week or a couple of weeks ago? Anyway, I had the fluorescent light back where my computer is in the back room.
Yep.
And I was only getting 2 bulbs to burn, and the 4 would not burn.
Yeah.
From time to time, the 4 would come on, but most of the time it was only 2.
Yeah.
Turned out to be a bad bulb.
One bad bulb, but they were new bulbs.
Yeah, they were new.
They came with your fixture that you
with
bought
the
back
fixture.
There.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, one more thing about the electronic ballast lights.
All right.
If you have 4 lights and one of them goes out, the other 3 burn. Whereas on your old-style fluorescent lights...
They're in pairs.
They're in pairs.
Because these are not in series.
Do you use... a while ago you said you changed bulb, but still, I mean, a fluorescent bulb, any is going to work, right?
No,
you have to buy certain...
You have to buy a new bulb.
Oh, okay.
Bulbs to go with it.
And it is the same length, and it has the same pin arrangement on the end, but its diameter is different.
What would you specify?
Yeah, if you were going to buy the bulb.
If you were going to buy a bulb.
What would you ask for?
What would I ask for?
Yeah.
Geez, I don't know. I just go in and pick out the size I want.
Because if you weren't careful, you might go and grab a...
They are the smaller bulbs. That's one way you can tell. They're smaller in diameter.
Okay.
Right. They're about 2/3 as big as the other one. Wonder if, the old bulb wouldn't work, Gordon, you don't think?
No, it would not.
It would not work.
No.
We didn't try that, but you just know that it wouldn't?
No, I'm quite certain it wouldn't, or they wouldn't make the other bulbs.
There'd be no point, would there?
Right.
But these
there's also an improvement in the bulb itself.
Yeah, it gives off. I mean, it's and I was told that of course that kitchen light we leave on all the time. And the guy this Leonard Peterson told me this stuff, and he said leave the light on all the time. That it's just as cheap just to leave it on as it would be to turn it off and on.
Uh-huh.
That it's just more efficient.
Right.
So if you have fluorescent lights, this is the thing. Of course, I guess you can probably buy a fixture with an electronic ballast and just put up a whole new fixture if you wanted to.
That is true. You can.
Which would be the
well, sensible. Obviously, this would be the coming thing.
Yeah,
The old type
will probably be gone.
Say in 5 years they won't make the old ones, you think, Gordon?
What do you think? No, I'm sure they won't. There'll be no reason for it.
These don't have all that wax in them where they melt like those. You know, we had those two that were up in there. Well, one it was, didn't you say it was so hot you couldn't touch it?
Oh, yeah, it was really hot, and tar was running out of it.
Wow.
But they'll continue to make the old bulbs until, you know, everybody's had time to wear out their fixtures, I'm sure. But the actual fixture won't be manufactured probably too much longer.
Probably, if they even manufacture them now.
Right.
You know?
Right. We don't know.
Well, new things.
I didn't know it's much better.
It's much. They say much more.
And the bulbs last longer too, also, because we do some cleaning and maintenance at an office, and you know they have lots of fluorescent lights there, and you know I'm changing bulbs, you know, because again talking about in pairs, I'm changing bulbs, you know, 2 or 3 times a month in different lights, and it just if there was a longer lasting bulb for an office or you know something big like that, it'd be a lot better.
I built 2 offices, and I was trying to save a lot of money. So anyway, I have a friend that's an electrician. He had taken a bunch of these electronic ballast lights out of an office building and just kept them. And yeah. I bought them used, and they were used. I mean, they were old lights.
Yeah.
And I've put them in those two offices, and so far I've replaced one ballast.
And since
been,
when?
Been since in there since 99.
Well, and
I've placed one or two bulbs. But that just shows you the, how good they are.
See, Luann's got a jillion fluorescents at her office. I'm just wondering if it'd pay her to get some electrician to just come down and replace every one of them.
Well, if not that, at least change them out as they go bad, you know,
yeah.
to the new lights.
Yeah, I bet
well,
they use lots of them.
Because, see, I wasn't even aware of them. Like, we just built a new house, and I have fluorescents in a couple in the garages only. But I wonder if they even, how would I tell if they were the new ballast or not? Because I'm sure he went the cheapest route, so whatever.
It's remove one bulb, and if another one goes off, you've got the old style.
Okay, and then there's on a two-light fixture, both bulbs have to work.
Uh-huh.
Okay, then mine is okay. They must be the new ones because one bulb was screwed up and the other one was still burning.
Yeah, well, you probably have them.
So he put in the new ones.
He put in the new ones, yes.
I don't think they're that much more expensive than the old ones.
Well, they're a little bit more, but they're darn well worth it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you what, after being at Lowe's just the other day and we were looking at every lamp and every fixture in the place had a fluorescent light in it, didn't it, Gordon? Mm. And I just don't believe it'll be too long before you won't see any of the old style bulbs at all.
We have some of those fluorescent bulbs that screw into a light socket at home,
uh-huh.
and man, they do. You know, they're more expensive when you buy it, but they do last. I mean, forever.
Yeah, that's what really I did in my kitchen. They need to get off of that price because I was going to use some of those, but some of them are like $15 a bulb. You know,
they're high.
I bought two and put in lamps, and oddly enough, one of them went bad pretty quick. You know, so
really?
That kind of broke me out. Yeah, it just wouldn't. But I mean, it's a good idea, but they really need to do something with the price.
Yeah, it could come down a bit on the price.
Well, my wife had a fixture that Gordon put up, as a matter of fact, on the front porch. And it had two floodlights, 150-watt floodlights in it. I mean, it was lighting up the whole neighborhood, not just the front yard.
Yeah.
But anyway, we went down to Lowe's, and we spotted some floodlight design with the fluorescent in it. And I just got some of those and put in there, and it's a really nice light, and it'll save me money, too.
You sure will.
Are they shaped just like the old ones?
Yeah, look just like the original floodlight, but it's got a fluorescent inside.
Because, I have, we put floodlights like Phil did all around the corners of our house, you know.
Gotcha.
But Emily won't let me burn them because she says the electricity. And I said, well, what good are they?
Yeah, if you don't.
So I make it sell her on the idea of fluorescent bulbs.
She won't let you burn them?
No, if I turn them on, then she'll go around and turn them off. She'll say, well, you know.
Well, let's
see. She goes by and turns off ceiling fans and everything. And I go, Emily, leave the fan on all the time.
Well, these were equivalent. What, Gordon, it was equivalent of 150 watts total, the two wires.
Right, they were 75-watt bulbs. But now, go ahead. I know
we
what you're
could let them. We could let them burn and burn and burn and burn. And I walked over there and I put my hand up on them and they won't even burn you.
Wow.
A regular floodlight would burn your hand.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, also, it's 75 watts of candle power, but I think technically the bulb is only like 34 watts.
It was 34, right.
Right.
34 watts.
I'll have to look at
those. Can you put these bulbs in an existing fixture?
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, man. Yes. I need to look at that, too.
They're sold right now at Lowe's for 13-something a pair.
Yeah.
Really? That's a good, that's not too bad right there.
What a deal.
And they're real nice.
See, I have just the opposite problem with my wife. She would leave. I told her, we could have saved a lot of money with this house. If I wasn't going to live here, you just wouldn't have needed to put any light switches in. Because you never turn them off. You just leave every light. You know, every morning when she goes to work, I go through and turn all the lights off. Go upstairs and turn the light off up there. You know, and the one in the closet, the one in the bedroom, and the floods out back. And, you know, it's just,
every
she just does not
make the rounds.
Every time we get an electric bill. Emily O'Gummy says, see, I told you leaving that computer on all the time.
She doesn't really say that, does she really?
Yeah, she's pretty frugal about turning off switches. And, and switches you don't need to turn off.
Yeah.
Well, I am too. I go around and turn lights off, but, you know, there's no point in having lights on in the daytime, is there? I don't. Wait till you see the kitchen. You're going to love it, Pat.
Well, what were the kitchen bulbs we put in there, fluorescent? What were the wattage on
I have those? No idea. Gordon, you didn't have to look?
They were equivalent to 100 wattage, but 100 watts. A lot less than that. I don't remember what it was.
I don't remember.
36 amps, 37 amps.
Something like that. But it was equivalent to a 100-watt bulb, so I've got like 400-watt bulbs in my dining room kitchen area.
So we got 400-watt bulbs in my kitchen then, right?
Oh, no, I don't think yours are 100-watt.
Yours are brighter than that, I think.
I think yours are 60s, aren't they?
I don't know.
I didn't really look, to be honest.
Blind people shouldn't be involved with lights anyway. I mean, it's
Yeah. I think what we did was more or less for your wife.
I have my wife. I need to get my wife to repair my Braille writer. See about that. Well, we'll take a break and have our special guest in just a moment with more of the exciting 95th edition of The Blind Handyman. Back in a minute.
Talking about issues related to blindness.
Then Saturday night, it's on to live music and karaoke. Sunday morning at 11 a.m., we'll record our 100th Blind Handyman Show. And we've got something special planned for Sunday afternoon. Then Sunday night, it's more live music and karaoke. A great time to meet old friends and make new ones. For more information, call 936-634-9500. Or email philparr@txucon.net. We'll see you in Houston in November. We promise you a great hotel, a good time, and perfect weather. Call 936-634-9500 or email philparr@txucon.net.
Listening to The Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be a part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Pretty exciting, isn't it? The guys are out smoking. Is Shaw out smoking? Maybe it flooded his house. Oh, we haven't got him to tell his house flooding story yet, have we?
No, really. We need him to.
Yeah, we need him to tell. We had rain. You people probably saw it on the national news. We had about 7 inches of rain in about an hour period. What time did it start? About 10 minutes till 11?
Yeah, give or take, 10:30.
I just laid in my chair and read my book. There's nothing I could do if when I got up, if I stepped in water, well, that's just the way it was. There wasn't anything I could do.
No, you can't stop it. It's not like you can just go out and snap your fingers and it stops.
Well, of course, about 11:30, that lady from the Sunset House called and said, Mr. Parr, the roof in the bathroom is leaking. Well, what would you suggest I do about that right now? I don't know what the deal is, but
What's your sauce?
That's I would have gotten my car and taken her a couple of buckets.
I kept all my change in a bucket, and my daughter Nan left, and Nan took it.
Nan took it.
But now she, so I don't. I haven't sent anybody over there. I guess I'm gonna have to.
Gordon and I. We were hanging out and needed to go to Lowe's and got in the truck and started down to Lowe's, and it was barely raining in Burke. I mean, it was just sprinkling rain.
Yeah.
And as the closer we got to Lufkin, the harder it got. By the time we got in Lowe's and turned around and to leave, we got all of our stuff and started to leave. He went out and got the truck and backed it up under the cover where I could get in, because I would have been swimming out there as slow as I am.
Emily left that morning to go to Houston, and I kept saying, "You ought to look at this weather. Let's look at this weather. You might not be making a wise decision." So we got on the radar, and she said, "Anyway, she called me from Diboll, just south of Diboll, between Diboll and Corrigan, and said it's the sun's shining. I mean, it's not nothing here."
Really?
And then she went all the way to Houston, nary a drop of rain.
That's amazing. We're going down Farm Road 58. We turn right on White House, comes out by Walmart.
Yeah.
We're going on Highway 59. We're going south. Gordon's driving. He looks in the rearview mirror. He said, "Can you believe there's motorcycles behind me?" And I said, "No." And I looked in the rearview mirror on my side. And sure enough, here's a couple of motorcycles. And he said, "Well, they're hoping they're going to run out of it." And sure enough, it wasn't 2 minutes. Well, not even that long. We're out of the rain.
That is strange.
I went the Lufkin radar on KTRE on the computer. The storm was really right over Nacogdoches, and there was another smaller circle of it right over Lufkin. I mean, dead center. You go to Houston radar, Channel 13's radar, and it has the wide view, and there was no rain, and it was showing all the way almost up past Livingston. There was no rain on their radar, and Lufkin's radar took the whole screen was rain. Beating this thing.
But it was just in this isolated area, because south, what would you figure, Tom? South, if you south of me, your house is no more than 6 miles south of me.
6-7 miles, something like that.
I mean, it didn't rain much down there either. So
no.
You know, you always think, well, Ellis got to end somewhere. You know,
we got a little shower. There was a lot of rain in a short period of time, but it stopped.
Well, I'm almost like due west. I'm about 5 miles due west of you.
That would be about right.
And it flooded. I mean,
me and Shaw are basically in the same neighborhood.
Yep.
We right here together.
Well, speaking of Shaw, man, he's the guy that suffered the most from this flood.
Tell us your story. Now with today's flood story, here's Don Shaw. Water every room of the house, right?
Man, a flood and a fire must be about two of the worst things that you can just, as far as just, well, you know, wiping out years' worth of stuff. But, you know, it hadn't been what? We moved in that house, I guess, 5-6 years ago. And
you moved in that house in November
98. And we got carpet then, and some vinyl and some things. And as of last Friday, that was kind of taken care of, because in the really big rain they were talking about, we have this creek behind the house that just started coming up.
Yeah.
And creek started rising, and we have this one room that's a little lower that was a garage conversion, and the water hit the front door there first, and came up in that room, and just kept on coming up on top of the front porch, and then up above to the front door, and then just right on in the front door. And before you know it, man, we had water just about in every room, some deeper than others. Out in the garage conversion room, it was, I don't know, up above the top of my feet. You know, I don't know what, more than ankle high.
It was a little more than ankle high out there, right?
Yeah. Considerably more. And in some parts, it was enough just like to just over the top of the carpet, I'd say, which, of course, was enough to do in the carpet and the baseboards and all those good things. And
yeah.
I tell you, you haven't lived until you've drug out heavy, wet carpet and rugs and... Man, it's just, that's...
And you had all new carpet put in when you moved in that house over there.
Sure did.
Everything new. Yep. 6 years ago.
Yep.
Well, it was time to replace it anyway.
Well,
maybe not.
But
here's the thing.
It's going to be replaced.
You say that the water actually came from the front of your house.
Actually, it came both ways. It came in the way it came in. Actually, it came in the front first, yeah, because the back, actually, the way the house is built, you know, the back is built. You know how you got the big step out the back?
Yeah.
Actually, the front, I guess, is lower to the ground because it's on a hill. So, actually, it came in the front first. But, yeah, the creek, when the creek started rising, the front yard was underwater, the backyard, the pool, everything. It was just
and it was like a big lake. The pool looks terrible now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
really,
it's just,
we need to talk about that, too, after the show.
Well, and I had, we'll talk about it during the show.
About that, but
talk about it during this. That's the same time to talk about.
We've conditioned and put lots of chemicals in and cleaned it up last time, but with creek water now, that may be a different animal. I don't know this time whether we ought to drain it. Or try to put a lot of shock
in. I'd pump it way down. I'd pump it way down. You know, I did have, the creek got in the pool one time, but I lived in that house from 78 to 90, well, from 70, 78 to 80 to 90, when did you move in? 98.
We moved in 98.
So I lived there from 78, March 78 to November 98, 20 years, and I never got water in the house. Never.
Well, the neighbor said it's the worst they'd seen in 35 years.
I got the creek in the swimming pool. In fact, Tom was living with us when that happened. We got the creek in the swimming pool one time, but we never got water in the house.
So did y'all drain the swimming pool that time?
Yeah, but then I used to drain it every year. That was my method to clean it. I just let it get full of frogs and whatever, and I drained it every spring for years. That was my, till I learned better, till I learned you don't have to do that. But boy, it's a mess.
But man, that creek water is just muddy and nasty, and it's just, yep. Man, there was sand and all kind of stuff, you know, just all in the carpet and the house. I mean, it's
man,
it's bad.
Yeah, it is. Well,
could you tell us what your insurance company told you?
Well, I couldn't exactly say what
could
I
could you tell us what you told your insurance
that.
Company?
No, that wouldn't be nice.
On the show, right here, on the air.
But yeah, that's the real bad thing about this whole deal, I guess, would be that when you pay for your house insurance for years and you haven't ever made a claim, and then really when you need them, and they'll say, well, we don't cover rising water unless you buy flood insurance, which is a whole different animal, so... We're, been paying for insurance for all these years now, and it doesn't look like they're going to pay off. So,
oh, no.
I guess we're just going to be stuck with the bill for the new carpet. But there's something wrong with that whole deal. The insurance companies all must have gotten together and made this loophole that, there's something wrong when, if you were washing clothes and you went to the grocery store and your washer line broke... and flooded a room or two in your house while you were gone to the store, the insurance would cover it.
Yep.
But yet if the creek rises or if it rains enough and your yard floods and the water comes in, supposedly they won't cover it. So, how much sense does that make?
Didn't you tell me you had a washing machine line to bust?
Well, yeah, I think that washing machine line's in bad shape right now, actually. But, yeah, man, that's just...
You need to mention that to Luann when she gets home. She may know something. They're not going to pay you if they don't have to. If they can get out of it, they're not going to pay you.
They can get out of it.
I'd say that they may, because you're right away. If the commode just kept running and ran and ran and ran, you were gone 3 days.
Yeah.
And it's just, all over the house.
But the problem is, everybody knows we had this big rain. Everybody on the whole street's in the same boat we're in. So this flood took out our whole block of houses. I mean, they just all got
horrible
on Norris Street.
Yep.
Marilyn, what about Marilyn next door?
Lots of water in her house.
Charlie Gilbert too.
She said she hadn't had water in her house, and she said that happened in her house 10 years ago. It was the last time she'd gotten water in her house, and even our house then, I don't think, got water in it.
Do you remember one time, maybe right when you first moved over there, you came close?
We came close.
Yeah, remember
that time.
From the side, from that
side.
Ditch on the side.
From getting into the playroom,
And if it doesn't stop here soon.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when George lived there, because I'm actually moved from that house in 91. I still owned it, and George lived there a while. He may have gotten water in the playroom one time. I'm almost sure he did, but I never did.
We seen the ditch come up, and we weren't too worried even then. I mean, even when it got close to the playroom, because it's done that before. But I guess when we started to realize we were in trouble is when the front yard was flooding. Then, and the water was coming up over the pool in the backyard.
Didn't you say when
that's when we might have a little bit of a problem here.
You say when the dumpsters floated off?
The dumpsters, they just floated away.
Well, you know, in between my house and the garage, the separate garage, it's on a hill, kind of in like the house we built up is on a hill. So in between, I have grass growing there, but it's a little dip. And when in the middle of this rain, had I walked across it, I would have been probably wading in a foot and a half of water across that, and it ran. So that's how much water that I saw out there.
Well, you know how Noah felt now.
Yeah. Pretty much.
The other thing is, if you've never been through a flood, you don't really know what to do, because the first thing we thought about Friday night was, well, we'll save the carpet. And we called the carpet people. Actually, we called them Friday afternoon, and they said, yeah, you know, we're busy, but I think we can come by, and we can get, you know, we've got a vacuum truck, and we can get most of the water out of the carpet. So, you know, we'd never been through a flood before. We didn't know. We thought, well, maybe we can save this carpet.
Did they come?
And they did. They came, and they had the big, giant vacuum cleaner on the truck, you know, the really big one, and brought the hoses in the house and the water out of the carpet. But then the hell of it is that it probably wasn't 30 minutes after they left. You walk across the carpet, and the pad, I think, soaks up so much water,
sure
it's like a sponge, and it just lets more water get
Oh, and you'd have to pull it to get the odor.
Now it's got to be pulled, and we've pulled most of it, so.
Might as well do the living room. Call Floors Unlimited.
Yeah, that may be what we're going to have to do.
Well,
the computer room, out of all the rooms in the house, was it in the living room, got no water in them. And I picked the computer and all that stuff off the floor because, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen.
Your CPU sits on the floor?
Yeah, it sure does.
So. I moved to Lufkin in 72, and I bought a little house in Huntington. It was a little two-bedroom house. Let's see, it was a three-bedroom house that had the garage like the one you live in, converted into a nice big den room. It was really nice. It had a sliding patio door on it. Really looked nice. The second night I lived there, we got one of those April Lufkin floods, and I stepped out into the room and was ankle-deep in water.
Well,
I hadn't paid any on the house. I just moved the next day. That was my introduction to Lufkin, Texas.
No,
well, when you lived around the corner from the Allendale house over there on Jefferson, there's a creek right. Didn't you get water up there?
No, never did.
Well, I have a feeling maybe that creek came out of its banks. We didn't drive down there. We were past there today. But
I hadn't thought about that. That's possible.
Yeah.
Now, we had a sewer overflow in Jefferson. It made a nasty mess. But anyway, what are we doing here? We haven't talked about anything useful in weeks, have we? Why don't we take a little break and come back, and we'll talk about what to do in the fall to maybe protect tools or to get ready for fall, to get your leaf blower and all that kind of stuff ready, and how to kind of prepare for winterizing your tools that you used in the summer, your lawnmower and things like that. We have an expert with us on that subject, folks.
That's right.
We do,
We're not using him. He's charging us by the hour, and we haven't had him do a damn thing. So we'll be right back with more of the exciting Blind Handyman Show.
We'll arrive Friday, November 5th at the Sheraton on JFK Boulevard. Saturday, we'll spend the day talking about issues related to blindness. Then Saturday night, it's on to live music and karaoke. Sunday morning at 11 a.m., we'll record our 100th Blind Handyman Show. And we've got something special planned for Sunday afternoon. Then Sunday night, it's more live music and karaoke. A great time to meet old friends and make new ones. For more information, call
866-634-9500. Or email philparr@txucon.net. We'll see you in Houston in November. We promise you a great hotel, a good time, and perfect weather. Call 936-634-9500. Or email philparr@txucon.net. Here's news about the latest cassette magazine for blind people.
Tell me all about it, big boy.
Introducing Love is Blind. Is Blind, the audio magazine for singles.
That's great.
Very soon, you'll be offered a free cassette explaining just how the magazine works. Love is Blind. Love is Blind, the audio magazine for singles. The latest way to meet new people and make new friends.
I feel like a new man.
Love is Blind. Love is Blind. Audio magazine for singles. Coming to a mailbox near you very soon.
This is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often from blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here's more of the show with Don Shaw.
Well, the fall of the year is the time to talk about getting these leaf blowers in shape, and if you live up north, the old snow blower and things like that to kind of get going with. And Gordon here knows a lot about small engines and getting these tools ready and these things kind of prepared for the fall season. So what do you think, Gordon, about getting some of this equipment ready to go?
How old were you, first of all, when you were working on lawnmowers at the service station up there?
Let's see, probably 12 or 13.
That's what I thought.
You've been doing this a while then, haven't you?
You've been doing it a while.
Man.
I'm not really an expert, but we do know that all of these, all of the equipment we're talking about uses gasoline.
Yeah.
And most of them use gasoline with an oil mixture. And this, sitting over the winter, can turn into a syrup and really gum up the carburetor and the fuel lines and what have you.
Uh-huh.
So it's essential that we get that out of the system before we put it away for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, there are some additives you can put in there. They're supposed to prevent that from happening, but not everybody uses it. So just pour the gas out, then crank it up and run all of it out of the system. And next spring, when you get ready to use it, it'll be fine. It'll work just fine. You also want to check on your air filter and make sure it's good and clean before you start up the season, because that has a lot to do with the way it runs. You've got to have a certain amount of air to go with the fuel ratio. So,
see, I'm bad about not doing that. The filter is the one thing I know to check and just never, you know, just never do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just
mm-hmm.
to make it long, just never do it.
And some of them
should.
Some of them, like your Wheaties or whatever, they have little filters on the fuel line itself down in the gas tank.
Yeah.
Now, if you feel you can replace that, do so. But if you can't, take it and have it done by a professional. And you'll avoid a lot of your headaches. Typically, the thing wrong with a two-cycle engine is the carburetor gummed up. And that's basically what it is.
You've left that gas and oil in there in the wintertime, and it just gums up.
It does gum up, and it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
You have to completely rebuild the carburetor in order to solve the problem. And but if you'll do that, it'll eliminate a lot of your misery. And come spring, you'll be able to start it up and go to work.
Yeah, I think if you just use, you know, some do that common sense. And I was telling Gordon on the break that I've taken every one of my tools this summer to the repair shop. I mean, the three, the leaf blower, the weed eater, and then we had an unfortunate deal with the lawnmower where we bent the blade, which you wouldn't really call that an engine problem, but. And I'm fairly good about changing the filters or everything. I had replaced the fuel lines on my weed eater myself a couple of years ago, but this time it really just wasn't running right. The choke was, you know, and it could have been the gasoline, the gummy gasoline, and they got it all straightened out. But I'll tell you, they've improved, in my opinion. I used to really try to steer clear of two-cycle engines. But certain things you can't, and I don't care for electric, like leaf blowers. You always got to get the extension
cord
out and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have two pieces of equipment. My little Thomas moped has a two-cycle engine, and I have a... I cannot think
Ryobi.
Of the... No, not the Ryobi, but my chainsaw is a Husqvarna. I want you to know, that is a running... Those two engines are the best running little two-cycle engines I've ever had. Just,
I think they've improved them, too, over the years. It just... They seem to run better and longer now with that.
How many manufacturers are there actually that actually manufacture two-cycle? Are most of them made by the same people?
I don't know, because we get a lot of overseas. Gordons could tell you, but I think a lot of the European countries, the poorer countries, and are they still two-cycle is even for transportation?
Yeah, there's scores of those things made to come out of China.
Really?
Yeah, in various places, it's really hard to say. There's a lot of them.
You know, our pollution laws got so strict. That's why we started everything going to four-cycle over here, and they even, several of the big major motor scooter companies, like Vespa, for one, just now came back after 20-something years because they wouldn't upgrade their two-cycle engines.
They didn't sell them here because all they had was a two-cycle engine, and they weren't against the law. I guess they were against the law.
Places you really have to have strict pollution equipment on them. California, I mean, don't they have to almost make special, like even lawnmowers and stuff to be sold in California?
Well, you know, outboard motors are being made four-cycle now.
Yeah.
Because of the pollution. And it's quite an improvement. You can't even hear them run, hardly.
That'd be nice for blind people.
Jet skis, there will probably be no more two-cycle engines on those. You know, we had a Sea-Doo that was a two-cycle gas and oil injected of some sort. And we have a Kawasaki, and it has a four-cylinder, four-stroke inline engine. I mean, just like an inboard boat, and it is a Hummer. It's quiet. Mm-hmm.
I bet it'll get along over the water.
Oh, I'd say out there, and the speedometer said 50, if you can believe it. 50 watts, I don't know, but
kilometers, I guess.
I was hitting a wave every once in a while.
Is that right? Hold on on the jet ski.
You're living on the edge.
Well, you partial-sighted people.
Well, sometimes if you go during the week to Lake Nacogdoches, there will be maybe yourself and one cranky old fisherman,
Well, you know, lawnmowers are another product that we've abused all summer long now.
Yeah.
And we need to either winterize them, fix them up and get them ready for the spring, or we're going to be trying to get somebody to fix them for us come springtime. You have abused them. You hadn't changed the oil. You hadn't changed the air filter. You hadn't sharpened the blade.
Yep.
And these are four-cycle engines, but they have a crankcase, and the oil needs to be replaced in them because it's constantly picking up dirt and stuff as you use it. So be wise this year and change the oil and your air filter and what have you, and sharpen your blade and get ready for spring. And empty the fuel out of the system, because even though it's a four-cycle, you can still gum up the carburetor.
Good point.
Get rid of the fuel out of it, and park it in the garage, and you'll be ready next spring.
So you're saying if a person would go ahead and change the oil probably every year, every spring or whatever, that you would probably get more years than out of the motor?
Oh, absolutely,
if
yes.
If you hardly ever changed it.
What do you do when you bend the blade, man? You just buy a new blade, right?
Yeah, I took it. Well, I was afraid that we may have bent the shaft. You know, I had a brand-new lawnmower, fairly expensive, and I did that very thing on Allendale. I mean, the first day I used the mower, I hit a stump that I didn't know was there, and I just set it by the side of the road. Somebody went dragging it off. I didn't even try to. I mean, I couldn't. The engine, I took the blade off, and you could not. I damaged the engine some sort. Now they claim that, I guess, you can repair, but if you've bent the shaft in a little 4-horsepower Briggs & Stratton, the motor costs more to replace than, I mean, you can buy, the lawnmower itself didn't cost but
$99.
$100. And so, but Emily was out mowing kind of in the rough, and she hit a little stump she didn't see, and just, I mean, it mangled that blade.
Wow.
And,
years ago, lawnmower blades had what they call shear pins in them.
Yeah, I know what a shear pin is.
And that's so you couldn't bend the crankshaft.
Right.
But now the flywheel has an aluminum key.
Right.
So typically it will shear that pin if it's real bad.
Well, they said it, I mean, that air-cooled engine, their local place here, I could have changed the blade and gone just and bought the blade and put it on there, but I wanted them to check out the motor, and so they called me. That, we dropped the mower off. It's the fastest service I've ever had, and we weren't even home yet, and they called on a cell phone and said, your mower's ready, and so I went down there, and I said, I take it the engine was okay, and the guy, I pulled it one time, and it cranked. He said it was fine, just, but I mean, the blade was... was mangled.
Really? I'd like to have seen it. And that was actually something, a mistake that your wife made. That wasn't you.
Well, I'm sure it was my fault. And some, I probably am the one that told her to go out there and mow in that area.
Probably so.
I'm certain that if you asked her about it, it was my fault.
Well, of course, you're the guy that tore the fence down. And then what else did you do? You hit something else.
I tore the fence down with my tractor. And then, let's see, I ran over something else. And then only yesterday, I actually drove the mule over my new air wrench. And
did you?
I think it works okay. I kind of, but it seems like maybe it's a little misshapen.
You drove the mule over your new air wrench.
Pneumatic wrench, yeah.
That you just bought. How could you do that? I mean,
well,
you know.
It was laying on the garage floor under the mule, and I moved the mule and didn't see it.
Wow. And something else you did, something else you torn down that you ran into.
Oh, the gate.
The fence gate. Yeah.
After I had the fence repaired, then I crashed and burned into the
gate. Into the gate. Just an accident, you know.
What will he tear up today?
That's the big question.
That kind of stuff. All right. Well,
what a deal.
Gordon Vick, tell us about your gutters.
Oh, okay.
As long as you're here, you might as well do a little pitch for your...
First off, let me tell you that I'm from Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I'm a part of the Abacon Gutter Company, and we have offices in Chattanooga as well as actually it's Rossville, Georgia, which borders Chattanooga, and Birmingham, Alabama. We're in the Trussville area, and we sell a product called K-Guard. K-Guard is a leaf-free, debris-free gutter system, and this gutter system is the absolute finest. We guarantee that you never, ever have to clean them. They come in a variety of 18 colors. And they're screwed to the house as opposed to nailed to the house. We have patented inside mitered corners for your valleys. And they're an investment that's really great because people today are looking for maintenance-free homes.
Yep.
And
that's the truth.
Yes. This makes your gutter system maintenance-free. And... if we had a long time, I'd get involved with other gutters, but it really works and works well. Being a home improvement contractor for all the years that I've been, it's one of the finest improvements in guttering that I've seen over the years. And
because the leaves that you have on your roof that the water is going to bring down, that normally would bring down and would fill up a gutter that didn't have or did have a screen, wouldn't make any difference. This gutter would eventually fill up with leaves, and eventually the downspouts would all be clogged up, and the water would simply run over the edge, and the gutters wouldn't work. So when you walk out the front door, you're going to get doused.
Or the water runs backwards
back into the house.
And gets
up under your shingles. And so somebody once a year or so or more, depending on how many leaves you have, has to clean those leaves out. And that is not a fun job. And even if you have a screen, somebody's got to clean off the top of that screen.
That's correct.
With these gutters that you sell, you'd have to do neither one. Is that correct?
That is correct. It is a closed system. It works on the process of liquid adhesion. The water travels along the top of the hood and turns and it goes as it goes over the edge, it turns and goes in the front of the gutter. And naturally, all your wood, leaves, and debris float on top of water. And as it makes the transition to turn and go in the front of the gutter, all the debris falls to the ground. And therefore, it's...
Which is where you want it.
Which is where
That's
you
right.
want it. And then all you got to do is rake it up and get rid of it.
Yeah.
It is installed with large downpipe, the 3x4 inch as opposed to the 2x3s, because there are some particles that get in it, such as roofing grit. if you have a lot of pine trees, you'll get a few pine needles in it, but the next heavy rain will flush it clean out those large downpipe. So it's really not a problem at all.
But it's an expensive system. It doesn't come cheap.
Yeah, very much so. It's 3 to 4 times the price of a standard gutter. But it works.
Did we not hear, too, that maybe you had something to do with a conversion kit where you could existing gutters and...
That is being worked on as we speak because we have a lot of new homes that don't want you to take their new gutters down.
Right.
But yet they want something similar to what we've got to take care of their leaves and debris. And we're working on that right now, and we will accomplish that.
Well, having all the debris, sticks and things going to the ground, man, would be the way to have it.
No, oh, it's the only way to have it. You have a lot of trees.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. No question
there
about that.
Commercials I'd have to do to get a gutter system on my whole line.
Well, I'm holding out for the existing, for the conversion kit.
Conversion kit.
Yeah,
that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Oddly enough, though, right where I live at the moment, we have the fewest trees close to the house that I've had in quite some time. Allendale was a killer. They were all trees that shed their leaves, and the leaves, I mean, you could walk in a foot of leaves, you know, and the gutters, it was a constant thing, twice and three times a year. I was up on that high roof getting that mess out of there.
Ours is that tree that's over her loft, that's over the high part of the house there. It'll get branches on it, and those branches will get out on the roof, and when it rains, those branches hold water some way or another, and the roof leaks some. But if you keep the branches cleared off, the roof doesn't leak.
Mm-hmm. Huh. What it is. So. Man, that's kind of different. That it won't.
No, it won't. Not a drop of water came through that roof Friday during that big rain. I was laying there in my chair reading a book. I wasn't getting up.
And if it was going to, it would have come.
I kept waiting. Any minute I'll hear it hit the floor, and I never did. I never did. Because the boys got up there and trimmed those branches the other day. And got those off the roof.
Well, standard gutters typically are the same height in the back as they are the front. So when your downspouts clog, the water flows to the house as well as over the front of the gutter.
Yeah.
Causing you problems. You're getting water in your soffit and your facer board. And in some cases, it will actually rot your roof decking.
Well, you had told me, too, I think I was pointing out how they had put these little stopper things, little square things that stick up above the gutters on my house at the ends of valleys, and you said, yeah, all that'll do is direct the water.
Feeds it right back into your house.
Back into your house.
That's correct.
And they have, I was looking.
Traps debris, too, by the way.
I'd take those down.
Yeah, it sounds like it'd be the thing.
Why do they put them there? To keep what is their purpose, Donald?
That just seems to be the new way they're doing it. They think it's directing the water and making it flow into the gutter. Like it comes down the valley, and I guess it keeps it from overflowing out front.
Yeah. Standard gutters can't capture the water that travels down a valley in a heavy rain.
Right.
So they put that up there, to have some kind of psychological effect for their customer that it'll hit that and fall down in the gutter.
Right.
Yeah. But it's better to let it just come on over.
Yeah.
There's rains that no gutter will handle what comes out of
it. Yeah, like what we had Friday probably wouldn't have.
Yeah.
No. There'd be no way, and nothing will prevent your carpet from getting...
That's it. Water's going to do what it's going to do.
We've talked a lot about water today.
Yeah,
the whole show's been devoted to it.
Water.
How much time we got, Houston? I'm tired of this.
We've got a couple of minutes.
I'm ready
to
go.
Can I say something?
Sure, you can say anything you want to. We need your help.
It's September.
Yes, it
We're
is.
Entering the fall of the year.
Uh-huh.
We had a show a while back about smoke detectors.
Uh-huh.
And having your furnace checked out.
Yeah.
You know, and I would like to remind everybody to please... Replace the batteries in your smoke detectors. Have your furnace checked out. Have your heaters checked out, whatever you have. And make sure you don't have a fire this fall when you turn your heat on. And I think it would be smart. If you can't see to do it yourself, call the fire department. Have them come out and go over it with you.
Great tip.
Make sure your fire extinguishers are up. And take care of matters before something happens.
That's right.
Yeah, everybody ought to have a fire extinguisher around the kitchen, around the house, a couple of them, you know.
Because, you know, it was in the fall of the year, late fall, November was exactly, you know, when we had that furnace fire that we've talked about before on the show. And it was, you know, it just, so yeah, check, you know, that's really a good
You know, of course, we don't want, nobody wants the police, you know, Big Brother coming and checking on your house. But I was just thinking about fire extinguishers. The only one I have is on our jet ski, and the only reason it's there is because they make you have one. So I'm thinking, naturally, we don't want them checking on us, but it's a shame they can't make you have one in your kitchen, because I would have one.
every once in a while, I'll think when I'm at Lowe's or Sam's or someplace, and I'll buy a couple of new ones, and then 5 years later, because how long would they last? A couple of years. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, I'll think, oh, you know, I ought to replace those, and I will, but I don't do it nearly often enough, and I don't even think there's one out here. I don't think there's one.
It's one of those.
Well, you have to ask yourself: should a fire break out, what am I going to reach for?
The doorknob.
I understand the doorknob, but what if it's real small and you could do something about it if you had something?
What are you going to do? Nothing. There's nothing you can do.
Well, your insurance company would probably ask you, was it a rising fire or wind-driven
fire? That's right. That's probably what they would say.
And if it was a rising fire, they won't pay.
They won't pay.
That's right.
You need to talk to your lawyer, Don Shaw.
Probably.
Absolutely.
Well, Mr. Gordon Vick, it was nice to have you, and thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you for coming.
I appreciate you guys.
We wanted to talk about all the things that you'd done to prevent Tom from hurting himself or tearing his house down, but we didn't get into that. Tom had destroyed his front deck with his wheelchair. We'll talk to you about that sometime. Thanks for
another show.
All guests of the Blind Andy Man Show are paid and compensated, and travel arrangements were made by Rayon.
They all stay at the beautiful Blind Andy Man summer home.
In Burke, Texas.
Little trailer house, of course.
Thank you, Don Shaw, Don Patterson, Tom Houston.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. We'll see you next week for show number 96. And don't forget our trip to Houston. Give me a call, 936-634-9500. Thanks again, Phil Parse. He said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.
Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.